Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today we're talking with Susan Dublin. She's the Vice President and Territory Manager for Group Dynamics, Inc. in Falmouth, Maine. Susan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's great to be here.
You know, we're going to be talking about employee benefit administration today, which for those listening out there may not seem to be the most exciting topic in the world, but think about this. You can save time, save money, and if that doesn't get you to listen, I don't know what else will, right?
Absolutely. Completely agreed.
So, you know, Group Dynamic, Inc., the organization, tell me a little bit about that. Tell me a little about, you know, the behind the scenes of what it's about, how long it's been around.
Sure. Group Dynamic was founded in 1989, actually on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, is our date of incorporation. And we started out with a handful of people operating flexible spending accounts, and our original product, which was called Choice, and it involved setting up employees in a database and creating a personalized enrollment form for each employee. And employers could do things like apply dollar credits to purchase benefits, basic cafeteria plan concepts that are still around, but that was our very first product. And now we've grown to almost 50 people, and we're doing some pretty complex things with HRAs, health reimbursement arrangements, still the bread and butter, flexible spending accounts, health savings accounts, COBRA admin, and some other administrative processes that are, you know, good for a small segment of employers or a smaller segment, such as retirement-based HRAs. So it's just really grown over a little over 25 years, and we're pretty proud of our track record.
No, and you certainly should be. Certainly growing over those time frames is during the good years and the bad years, right, out there for organizations.
Yes, absolutely. It was a struggle in the early years, as I understand. I wasn't here then, but sure, it's, you know, you just have to stick to the knitting and watch the budget and keep doing what you do best.
So these innovative solutions that you're talking about, that companies can provide, what I'd like to do today is obviously go through these. And our intention here is to obviously try to provide the audience with some updates of what's going on in these different areas, if you could, as well as certainly understanding why, you know, these are so important to organizations to either outsource or being managed for them. So you said from the beginning that one of the biggest things you do is in the health savings accounts.
Yeah.
So tell us about health savings accounts. Tell me why organizations would consider, you know, having somebody manage this for them, and how this works, because obviously you can do that in many places. You know, why? What are they, and what are they all about first?
Great. Well, the health savings account is one of, probably it's the newest consumer-driven healthcare type of account. And it has a lot of similarities to a flexible spending account, medical account, in terms of what it covers and the value to the employee. But there are some key differences. The health savings account requires the account holder to have what is known as a qualified high deductible health plan. And most folks, most listeners out there will know basically what that is. It's a deductible that is in 2017 in excess of 1,300 single, 2,600 family, although, and that's dollars, $1,300, $2,600. That's the statutory bottom floor on that deductible. The marketplace typically operates now at the 3,000 single, 6,000 family level. The other rules about the qualified plan include that all medical care needs to be subject to that deductible, with the exception of preventive care. And there have been some modifications to the rules that certain pharmaceuticals that are considered preventive, like high cholesterol management, blood pressure management, those typical use drugs, can also be classified as preventive and function outside that deductible. So the employee, in making the choice, is saying, I'm willing to manage maybe quite a bit more out-of-pocket cost if I have to have medical care in exchange for a relatively lower premium in most cases in a group or in an individual plan, and the ability to have the health savings account. So the health savings account is just really super. It allows a statutory maximum of over $3,000 in pre-tax savings for a single plan and over $6,000 in pre-tax savings for a family plan in a tax year, so those are annual limits. The account rolls from year to year throughout life and becomes retirement income that is only taxed at income tax level after age 65. During your working life, it is used tax-free for any health care expenses, and that's inclusive of long-term care premium as well as COBRA premiums, should you be in between jobs at any segment and be covering COBRA.
So I want to back, if I can hold for there for just 1 second.
Yeah.
So if you fund as an individual, you fund a health savings account. That money obviously can be used for paying down deductibles or paying for medications or paying, but it also, you're saying, can be used to pay for your COBRA should you change jobs and have to have 2 or 3 months of paying COBRA while you switch to a new employer.
Absolutely. Yep. And our platform, you know, we'll talk a little bit about our product, but most banks, and in our platform, the bank that stands behind our product, they keep a $2,000 cash level fund, and then it goes to investment at anything over $2,000. And so it's just a triple win, because your pre-tax going in, no gain on investment in the account, so you're building toward future medical expense capability, and then no tax on the spend as long as you are using it for qualified medical expenses, or just income tax applies after age 65. It's just one of the best things out there for folks who can get the money set aside and manage healthcare costs, you know, in an effective way while you're in that process. It's great.
Well, as you said, this money certainly belongs to you. You're the individual. It's not owned by the organization or owned by anybody else. It's your money.
Yeah.
It reduces your tax income. You're talking about that.
Yeah.
It grows with you. Again, you're saying basically after $2,000, it grows with you in an investment.
Yeah.
One of the questions that always gets asked is, what happens at the end of the year, or what happens at the end of the next year if you don't use it all?
Yeah, great question. It just rolls. It's basically nothing happens. There aren't any rules about, you know, you do tax filings relative to your contributions and your spend just for informational purposes, and there's potential to be audited, obviously, if you're spending the money on, you know, large screen television sets instead of medical care. But so basically things just flow along from year to year with continued growth if you're able to keep setting the funds aside.
So one of the other questions that always comes up about HSAs is that you can have an HSA for your individual self, or you can have one, for example, for your family.
Uh-huh.
And so what really is the difference, and what's the benefit to doing one or the other? For example, someone who's married or may, you know, not know whether to do it as an individual or to do it as a family plan.
Sure. Well, what you can do with the HSA is driven by the level of health insurance coverage that you have in the qualified health plan. So, for example, I work here at GDI. I am enrolled as a single in the qualified health plan. So my contribution to my health savings account is limited to the single cap. But if I covered my dependents in this plan, then I could enroll in the HSA as a family and contribute almost twice as much. So it gets a little complex, as everything does in benefit world sometimes, but it depends on probably the best choices for people to make about the underlying health coverage. And lots of times in families now, one spouse works with one employer with certain options. The other spouse works with another employer with certain options. So each individual is choosing the best that's on the table from each employer, also, and taking a look at their own health care needs, you know.
So that money can only be used for those purposes. For example, if you have a rollover amount for a couple of years and maybe you have $3,000 or $4,000 in there, you cannot go in and pull that money out for some other reason at some point.
That is correct. There are some little minute realities out there that you can pull it out as long as it gets back in within a certain time frame. I won't try to take apart the tax code
no.
on that.
No, thank you. No. No, we need people to stay on the road and keep their eyes driving, and it's a Saturday. We need to keep them engaged here, Susan. Keep them engaged.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things I did notice is an alert you had on your website, and it talked about new health saving accounts and high deductible health plan limits, that there's going to be a new limit for 2018.
Yes.
And it says that here, if I'm understanding is, I'm quickly reading it on here.
Right.
It says currently this year it's $3,400 for single and $6,750 for family, and then in 2018 it's going to go to $3,450 and $6,900 for family.
Right.
So that is just good information for people to know.
Yep, absolutely true. And the banks, you know, banks monitor maximums as well. And so, yeah, absolutely, it's a very good thing to keep in mind. And they've been indexing the amounts, you know, maybe not in a hugely generous way, but at least it's been going up each year since the inception of HSAs. So that's
sure.
good.
Sure. Well, you know, we mentioned COBRA, and so I might as well add that as the next one to my list of discussion points because we happened to mention it.
Yeah.
So COBRA is one of those things where obviously an organization has a health plan, and then, of course, if they have enough employees, I believe it's 15 or more, they have to be able to offer that health plan to somebody who's leaving.
Yeah.
And so tell me why COBRA becomes such a an issue in terms of being able to monitor from an administrative standpoint.
Right. And, yeah, at the federal level, it's 20 employees, and then there are some state continuation laws that kick in under 20. GDI basically involves itself at the federal level. It's a bear because there are timelines that kick in where notices have to be delivered within each time frame. For example, someone terminates employment or someone experiences a divorce and their spouse was covered on the health plan, there's X amount of time that that employer has to provide the notice of continuation rights and the ability to sign up. And then there's a time period that the employee has to choose the coverage. And the fines for employers who don't act within those timelines are very, very steep, like up to $1,000 a day for noncompliance. And sometimes in termination situations, you have people that are not happy with that employer and maybe, you know, looking for ways to express that unhappiness. And they also have rights under the law that are important to monitor. So it's an area where we certainly recommend that employers use a good outside administrator to manage that risk.
So when you're talking about risks, you're talking about fines, you're talking about some, obviously you want to do the right thing for the employee, right?
Yeah.
And provide that information.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about when somebody is dealing with this. Do you work with the insurance company? Is it typical to work with the insurance company or the employer? How does that relationship work?
Sure. We work with the employer and the insurance company. So we're one point on the tripod between the two key entities, well, and really another entity, the employee themselves or the former employee. So we're touching all bases. We set up a billing routine to collect premium from the employee. We either remit that premium to the carrier in some models of our COBRA design, or most typically back to the employer, because they're still monitoring a group bill where in most cases the carrier has isolated the COBRA people from the active people, just to get into the weeds a little bit there. But so we're flowing the money in most cases back to the employer. They're managing group payment. We are communicating with the carrier. Sam Smith has taken COBRA. We're telling the carrier that and the employer that. And we will then tell the carrier when Sam Smith's COBRA period has ended, or the earlier of the two, when Sam has stopped paying for COBRA and therefore it drops. So we're acting as a bridge on the employer's behalf with the employee and with the carrier.
Well, what's great about that is obviously an employer doesn't have to worry about the weeds, right?
Yeah,
they're doing whatever they want to do,
yeah,
which is move on to the next employee, move on to the next train, keep the business moving.
Exactly.
Right? And then you handle all this issue for them.
Yes. And the COBRA team here is great. The knowledge of the law is extremely high. And they're just extremely efficient. So, good people.
We're talking with Susan Dublin. She's with Group Dynamics, Inc.'s Vice President and Territory Manager. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We're talking with Susan Dublin. She's the Vice President and Territory Manager for Group Dynamics, Inc. We're talking about employee benefit administration. Stay with me, folks. It's great stuff. You're going to save money. You're going to save time. And Susan is doing a great job of providing great information for us today. Right, Susan?
I hope so.
It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Great. Well, we talked about, obviously, HSAs, and we've talked a little bit about COBRA. Let's talk a little about FSAs. First of all, what is an FSA?
Sure. An FSA is a flexible spending account. We just have a lifetime supply of acronyms in this world.
Yeah, I was going to say we are acronym heavy. It's okay.
Yes. And there's a joke about acronyms, and it's an acronym, and I can't remember what it is. But so, a flexible spending account occurs under Code Section 125, and it's one of the older forms of pre-tax savings. It is, we talked about the HSA. It's similar in that an employee is reducing their taxable income by setting aside pre-tax dollars into an account to cover eligible medical, vision, or dental expenses. Key difference with the FSA, it doesn't have a requirement of a certain type of health plan, only that you be eligible for your employer's health plan.
So let's break that down just for a minute if we can so that people understand. So we've talked about the health savings account. This is called a flexible savings account.
Right.
So the big difference is that there are more options to use that money. Is that correct?
No, not more options to use it. They pretty much have the same spending option with qualified medical, vision, or dental expenses. And the FSA actually does not allow any premium expenses. So you can't do your COBRA premium from an FSA or your long-term care coverage. So they line up on the expense types in terms of, you know, going to the dentist, buying new glasses, covering deductible, copays, et cetera.
So when an individual or when an organization is looking at an option between setting up an FSA or an HSA, how do they know what the best option for them is?
Well, that's a great question.
Thank you. I thought of it all by myself.
Yes. Most employers offer both, and let me explain why. There are lots of folks out there and I'm kind of continuing to bounce off the HSA picture because it's a good comparative point. There are plenty of folks out there who maybe don't feel that they are candidates for the qualified high deductible plan where all of your medical care and all of your pharmacy has to stack up toward meeting a fairly high deductible before you get insurance benefit. So they're more the types of folks that are comfortable in a traditional health plan. And just really quickly, what that means to most of us is there is a deductible in place for hospital and surgical and lab and x-ray, but access to office visits and specialist visits and pharmacy fills all have copays that are fairly manageable. So that's better for some people who have relatively high out-of-pocket cost. And so the medical flexible spending account is a wonderful adjunct to that type of plan because it's allowed to be there. You don't have to have the qualified high deductible plan. And this gives this type of employee the avenue to save up to $2,600 in the plan year, pre-tax, to cover those out-of-pocket expenses.
So when somebody sets up an HSA and they can save $3,400, and somebody sets up an FSA and they can save $2,600, I think you just said, right?
Yeah.
So they're, in a sense, saving a little bit around $6,000, a little bit over $6,000 total.
Yeah.
Is it the same with a flexible spending account that money gets invested? Is it the same that it can only be taken out for so many things that it's tax deductible? How does that work?
Sure. The medical FSA has really a defined set of rules compared to the HSA. So my money doesn't go to investment. It's absolutely capped out at 2,600. There is no growth, and I have to use it within the plan year in which I elect it, except for a couple of relatively new provisions that employers can adopt. There can be a $500 carryover of unused funds into the next plan year, or B, there's a grace period function that can be adopted where I have an extra couple of months in the new year to spend anything I had left over in the old year. But really, medical FSAs are fairly structured and defined compared to the HSA in that sense. And it's kind of like the IRS is rewarding you for taking more risk with the HSA. You know, you've got a high deductible plan, you're going to cover a lot more of your own health care, so you get this big fat account that can grow with you forever. And it's a little bit of an incentive in healthcare thought to reduce cost, you know, to the system. FSA is there to help people on a year-to-year basis when they would prefer to have a traditional health plan.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So now there is this limited purpose FSA.
Yes.
Which
oh,
is a
so
subset
good.
Of it. So tell me a little bit about that and how that differs from a regular FSA.
Sure. The limited FSA is kind of developed to be a partner with the health savings account. And I can give you a couple scenarios real quick of how that works. Remember that in the health savings account world, like, all medical has to be subject to deductible, and you can't have any other kind of coverage other than the health savings account that would help you pay that deductible. So the limited account in Flex World only allows vision or dental care, and technically also preventive care, but that's pretty well covered in the health plan. So vision or dental only in this limited purpose Flex account. So a thoughtful person who knows that their family has X amount of dental care every year, everybody needs glasses, contacts, whatever, they do a little extra money in this limited account to cover those expenses, thereby increasing their tax savings from what they're putting in their HSA, expanding it to what they're putting in the limited account, and letting the HSA grow to the extent that it isn't needed for regular medical expense. So it's a little more leveraging tax savings and conservatively letting your HSA grow by using this little side account. The other couple of things that it's really good for is in group situations where an employer is offering both a traditional plan and a traditional medical FSA, and then also offering the qualified high deductible plan plus HSAs. You're going to have people at each open enrollment who want to make changes. You know, I want to leave the traditional plan now and take a risk with this qualified plan and the HSA. And if they have carryover dollars from their general purpose flex, the presence of that limited purpose FSA is a really good design strategy because that employee can shift those dollars into that limited purpose status at the start of the new plan year, and they're free to open up their HSA and get going with that. So that's just, you know, some design strategy.
Sure,
there.
Sure. You know, for an organization that is potentially, I don't know, 10 or 20 employees, kind of a smaller organization, or maybe even one that has 5-6 employees, and they have a health plan that probably has a high deductible. I mean, that is in small business world what most of them are, right?
Well, yeah.
pretty much. Do you see organizations, even that small, really considering these options, and how cost-effective is it for them to be doing stuff like this?
Sure. I would say, just zooming out a little bit, that most smaller organizations are maybe not tending toward the qualified plans and the HSAs as a sole health plan. They may be more likely, they're going to have a higher deductible, yes, because everyone does now, but it'll be more like a traditional health plan with the co-payments for, pharmacy and visits and things like that. And yes, the addition of a flexible spending account and the POP, the premium-only plan, part of Section 125, which lets employees do their premium cost shares on a pre-tax basis as well. Those two pieces of Section 125 put together are an awesome savings, even for a small employer, because the employer saves the FICA percentage that they pay, the Social Security Medicare combination, that payroll tax, is saved on every dollar that the employee contributes into the plan on a pre-tax basis. So they're putting money in a medical flex account, maybe the dependent care account as well for daycare expense, and then their pre-tax premium dollars. The employer is saving 7.85% of every one of those dollars because they're not paying the FICA match.
And that's where the savings add up pretty quickly, right? I mean, that's where the savings add up quickly for the employer and the employee.
Yeah, a small plan, you may not see the FICA savings, wipe out the cost of offering the plans, but it's going to take a dent in it,
Sure, in terms of making that happen. One of the other things that you offered, switching gears for just a second and now, is really in the ERISA area.
Uh-huh.
And you do ERISA wrap documents. Explain that in general. What does that really mean?
Yeah, that's cool, and that's a brand new thing. The purpose of the wrap document is really very, nuts and bolts, kind of IRS-driven, and it helps employers to consolidate their 5,500 filing requirements. And let me just break that up a tiny bit. You may have dental plans and vision plans that operate on different plan year anniversaries from your core health. Sometimes people are all over the place with different anniversary dates, and they have reasons for doing that. The wrap document just wraps everything up, just as the name implies, and gives everything one annual point and pulls all the plans together so that your 5,500 filings are consolidated into one. So it doesn't resolve the need to have a legally compliant summary plan description for each of your, plans, but what it is a surface wrap that just makes things more efficient from the filing.
Sure, and that certainly helps an organization with time and compliance and all
it
that
does.
Area.
And that's going to be a larger employer, issue, pretty much 100
or more employees.
And over,
Okay. No, and that's fine. I think it's important to differentiate that and make sure the organizations know that that's what that means. We're talking with Susan Dublin. She's the Vice President and Territory Manager for Group Dynamics, Inc., and we're talking about basically employee benefits administration. Susan, when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about HRAs, retiree HRAs, and everything else that has to do with acronyms in the workplace. That's what we're going to be talking about, acronyms in the workplace. When we come back, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, News Talk, WLOB, 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today I also want to remind you about our sponsors, Jackson Lewis, All We Do Is Work, Redmond Winslow, Counselors at Law, Sheehan Finney, Verrill Dana, Attorneys at Law, and of course, Strategic HR, all great sponsors of the HR Power Hour. We continue to broadcast across WLOB 100.5 FM. And, of course, you can go to hrpowerhour.com at any time and listen to any show at any time. We're today, of course, talking with Susan Dublin. She's the VP and Territory Manager of Group Dynamics, Inc., and we're talking about the one, the only, Employee Benefit Administration. It's been a great informational show here today, Susan. I really appreciate you being on the show with us.
Well, it's just fun to do it. I love it. Thanks for asking me.
Oh, you're very welcome. All right, so let's talk about another acronym, because we just have not had enough today. Let's recap. We've done HSA, FSA, COBRA, and now we're going to be talking about HRA. So what is HRA?
Oh, HRA is like one of the most creative tools that's out there right now. And HRA means health reimbursement arrangement. People want to say account because everything else is an account, but it's technically a health reimbursement arrangement. And for tax code nerds, it is it's under IRS code section 105. And so this is like a whole different world from the accounts we've talked about, in that it's completely employer-driven and employer-owned, and it doesn't take, it will not accept employee contributions. So let me just like give you a story of one of my favorite little made-up accounts that I use in my CPA education sessions is Riverside Design LLC. And they're like an awesome company that creates all kinds of high-end household goods. And they recently got a contract with Pottery Barn. So they're just like really doing well and growing. So they start out with a really traditional health plan that, you know, a few years ago it had a $1,000 single deductible, 2,000 family, maybe even less, like maybe 500 single, 1,000 family. And that was it for the whole year. And then the cost crunch starts happening with the cost of care. And they have to make some changes, but they don't want to just dump a lot of out-of-pocket cost on their employees. And they're, you know, doing really well in their marketplace, so the money is there, but they just want to spend it wisely. They don't want to just continue to fund premium to a carrier. They want to do something better with the plan. So let's say they move toward a $2,500 individual deductible, 5,000 family, and we're actually talking back a couple years still, but the example still holds true. And they would like to just, in reality, make that deductible be half to the employees. So they create an HRA plan where the plan document says after you have incurred $1,250 as a single, half of $2,500, and after you've incurred $2,500 as a family, half of $5,000, we will pick up the balance of your deductible. And the, you know, from an admin standpoint, I don't know how deeply you want to go into that, but we will set up plans like that on a claim feed with the carrier, with certain carriers that we contract with to do that, so that the deductible information is coming to GDI in a secure manner, and we feed it through our claim system, track the out-of-pocket that the employee is required to meet, and then begin to pay as dollars over that out-of-pocket are coming in. And we can set up the plan to be paid to provider directly or pay back to the employee so that they can manage their bills.
Well, what's great about that is certainly an organization that has the funds and realizes that trying to do cost containment, right, in terms of the costs of a health
of a plan
in general,
yeah.
They give them an option of paying some of their deductible, and it certainly makes sense. Now, for the employer's standpoint,
right,
does that money roll over if not used? How does that work in terms of the total amounts that gets that put into that account?
Sure. Good question. The dollars always remain a corporate asset. It's the employer's dollars, and they're not shifted into the plan. Like, from a tax perspective, the HRA is not a funded liability. It's simply a tax deduction as claims are paid. So money not spent on claims belong to Riverside Design LLC. So in a sense, yes, it rolls because it was never actually tied up in the plan until or unless you're paying claims. So it's a simple structure, and the tax deduction occurs just like when you pay the premium on the group health plan.
Sure.
You're getting your deduction.
Understand. Now, you also have a subset called a retiree HRA, and what's the difference between that?
Sure. Retiree HRAs are typically this kind of idea. They can be set up just like Riverside Design's active employee, where if the retirees are covered in a retiree group health plan type structure, the employer can use an HRA in the same manner that they did for actives to cover portions of out-of-pocket expense. The really cool way to do a retiree HRA is to do a defined contribution plan versus a defined benefit, where you keep under the defined benefit concept, you're keeping those retirees in a specific health plan that you've negotiated for them, or a segment of your health plan. Premiums keep rising, you know, at an astronomical rate above the ones for the active group where you have some 20-year-olds in that mix. So rather than keep those retirees in that defined benefit structure, you bring them out into a defined contribution. You set up an HRA to provide X dollars per year that in the retiree world can be spent on Medicare Advantage products, individual purchase on an exchange of coverage. It can be spent on health care, vision, or dental expenses. So you end up providing the employee a bucket of dollars to solve their health care needs, the retiree, excuse me, versus keeping them nestled in a really high-cost benefit plan. And I'm not against anybody maintaining their super-duper benefit plan, but this is a strategy that is maybe becoming more necessary for some employers who have a commitment to supporting retirees but have to rethink how they're doing it.
Sure. No, and it makes a lot of sense in terms of being able to manage all this process and keeping the money separate and protecting the organization as well as the employee, really, from what you're looking to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the ways that the HRA opens up in retiree world is that it can be used for premium, where generally in the group world with active employees, it isn't. So that's a cool thing. It just gives an employer a lot of flexibility.
We're talking with Susan Dublin. She's the Vice President and Territory Manager of Group Dynamic, Inc. We've been talking about employee benefit administration. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we've been talking with Susan Dublin. She's the Vice President and Territory Manager for Group Dynamic, Inc., right in Falmouth, Maine. But hey, Susan, you do it outside of the state of Maine, right? You have actual administration throughout other states as well, correct?
Absolutely. We have people on the ground in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Ohio, and we have clients all over the country. So we are not just Maine by any means, and not even just New England.
Well, that's good, because right now the HR Power Hour is heard in about 32 states, so that's a good thing to know that there's a possibility that you could be helping them anywhere across the country. You know, one of the things we talked about in the beginning of the show, and I think it'd be a good time to just bring it back quickly, is we talked about HSAs, which, of course, is the bailiwick of the organization and really the focal point. Talk a little about how GDI can help an organization within, especially the HSA, and what they can do for the organization as we wrap up the show today.
Oh, thank you so much. So we know what the HSA is, and it's employee savings. Their HSAs, in a sense, in a very real sense, are not an ERISA benefit plan, but there is an aspect of group administration to HSAs. And let me just do kind of a quick comparison that as an employer, and more specifically within that employer, the harried HR person who is wearing many, many hats, and relating to payroll and relating to employees and their needs and questions. And so you've got this payroll deduction thing going on with funds going into an HSA. In some group situations, the employer may say, gee, you can go pick any bank you want and we'll payroll deduct and push those funds into your HSA bank account, creating kind of an administrative nightmare. You know, the choice is good, but the employer is then doing several different ACH pushes into the bank account and has no backup reporting of any kind to sort of balance payroll deductions to what went into that account, because they don't have any access to an employee's personal HSA. So what we love about the platform that we use to do HSAs is that it has group benefit management structure built into it and an awesome consumer portal as well, where the employee can easily go in and look at their HSA balance, look at their investment balance on the investment side of the account, move their investments around if, you know, they kind of learned about a different, you know, kind of opportunity that they might like to get their funds into. Ask to have a direct deposit made to their bank account to cover cost of medical care, et cetera. So, but the really cool thing for the employer is that they can get employer reports that will itemize and sum total payroll deductions with a distinction between payroll deduction and employer contribution, which is also possible, and totals in those two running items so that they can, you know, adequately balance internally.
Well, and that's really the key, right, is you're providing a service for employers
yes.
that can really manage and operate their administrative side of these processes in COBRA, HSA, FSA,
yes.
and all the different acronyms we've talked about today. But right. it really is a benefit to the employer of having one place to go
yes.
And one organization to keep it managed.
Yes, and that's what we love doing. And we also do the qualified transportation accounts, which include parking and transit, which includes public transit or van pooling. And those are popular in the Boston, D.C., New York area, maybe a little bit less so in the northern New England area because, you know, the urban centers are not quite as dense and there's still reasonable amounts of parking.
No, you're absolutely right. Yes. Susan, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Again, we talked with Susan Dublin, Vice President, Territory Manager for Group Dynamics, Inc. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerilDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from Veraldana. The sun is shining, and you know what that means. It's time to send out the reminder emails to employees about appropriate and inappropriate office attire. While summertime appears to be the period in which we experience the highest rate of dress code violations, it's not the only time. Instituting and maintaining a dress code policy is the first step, but keeping up on enforcement is always important. Employees who push the envelope without ramifications will serve as a model, and you will soon find yourself with an ineffective dress code policy. Remember the importance of gender neutrality in instituting restrictions and the importance of tying the restrictions to the job or business. Further, remember that there may be situations where not enforcing a dress code provision could serve as a reasonable accommodation for a disability. These types of situations should not be overlooked. Contact a member of Veraldana's Labor and Employment Practice Group if you'd like to discuss more.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Veraldana.com. Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.